this is what our discussion is going to look like today. We're going to start by looking at what is compassion, then talk about why it matters. Thirdly, we're going to look at a passage from Luke and discuss how Jesus demonstrates compassion. And finally, talk about how we can demonstrate compassion. So let's get started on that first one. What is compassion? We're going to go on a bit of an etymology deep dive with the hope that we'll come out the other side with a full understanding of what compassion means in the Bible. So we're going to start with the Hebrew word rachum. I didn't pronounce that entirely correctly because I can't roll my R's yet, but something akin to rachum. Rachum is used 99 times in the Hebrew Bible, and it means compassion, full of compassion, or compassionate one. Interestingly, it's rooted in the Hebrew word for womb. This connection evokes the idea that compassion is a motive. It's something that dwells and ruminates deep within us. At times, rachum, or words related to rachum, are translated as deeply stirred. This imagery of parenthood and womb-related words is often used to describe compassion, particularly God's passion towards Israel. In Isaiah 49:15-16, God says this to Israel through the prophet Isaiah. He says, "Can a woman forget her nursing child and have no compassion on the son of her womb? Even though she may forget, I will not forget you. Behold, I have inscribed you on the palm of my hand. Your walls are continually before me." To draw out this imagery, I wanted to share with you some of my own experience as a mother of a newborn. When my son Reuben was a newborn, there were times where he would be asleep in another room. And when he woke up, John, my husband, would come into me and say, "He's awake." And I would say, "I know." See, my body was so attuned to the needs of my son that I had literally started to pour out milk for him the moment he awoke, even if I couldn't see him or hear him yet. Turns out, that's actually a pretty common experience for mothers who choose to breastfeed. The image of a nursing mother in this Isaiah passage is one of a parent who is turned towards her children, ready to respond to their needs. And this imagery of a responsive parent isn't just in the Isaiah passage. It's a design pattern that's woven all throughout the Hebrew Bible. It starts in Genesis with the story of Cain and Abel, where Abel's blood is described as crying out from the ground. And this cry and response pattern continues through the laws, Psalms, and prophets. In this pattern, God's compassionate response to Israel usually takes the form of forgiveness, justice, and rescue. For example, in that story of Cain and Abel, God hears the cry of Abel's blood, and he responds justly by confronting Cain for his brother's murder, but also by offering mercy when Cain says, "My punishment is greater than I can bear." How beautiful is that? That God chooses to reveal himself and his compassion through the imagery of parenthood. That the God of the cosmos compares his compassion for humanity to the relationship between a mother and a newborn child. This is the image of a woman who is exhausted, bruised, and potentially has undergone major surgery, but is constantly turned towards the needs of her child, even in her sleep or when she's off duty. It's a woman who will consistently move towards her child and offer them rescue from hunger or loneliness or distress before they earn it or before they deserve it. A similar definition of compassion is also used in the New Testament, which is written in Greek. The Greek word oikteimos means pity, compassion, or mercy. It also has links to the inner parts of our body. And again, it's associated with something that dwells and ruminates deep within us. It's an active word. And sometimes it's translated as moved with compassion. We see this when Jesus is often moved with compassion to forgive, to act justly and rescue people from their suffering. And finally, the Latin word compati isn't listed in the Bible, but it's the root of which our English word compassion comes. It literally means to suffer with. It involves feeling the pain of another person and relieving or co-bearing their pain. So if I'm going to sum that all up and come up with a short, sharp definition of compassion, this is what I'd say. Compassion is to see and feel the pain of others and then act in a way that reduces their suffering. So for the rest of this discussion, when I say compassion, that's what I'm talking about. So knowing all that, why does compassion matter? Firstly, compassion is part of the character of God. In Exodus 34, Moses is on Mount Sinai and he encounters God in a cloud. In this moment, God tells Moses exactly who he is. In Exodus 34, 5 to 6, it says this, "And Yahweh descended in the cloud, and he stood with him there," that's Moses, "and proclaimed the name of Yahweh. And Yahweh passed over before him, and he proclaimed." The part I'm about to read out is God talking about himself. He says, "Yahweh, Yahweh God, who is compassionate, gracious, slow to anger, and abounding with loyal love and faithfulness." Compassion is an important part of how God identifies himself. It matters because to understand compassion is to understand the Father. Secondly, it matters because Jesus was the ultimate expression of God's compassion. This call and response pattern of the Hebrew Bible, the cry and response, ultimately leads to Jesus. Jesus is God who became human, who lived life in our broken world and co-suffered with humanity. He entered into our suffering and even into death to offer us forgiveness and rescue. And lastly, it matters because we're called to bring heaven to earth. The teachings of Jesus and some prophetic literature, such as Revelation and the imagery of the New Jerusalem and some literature in Isaiah, point to a restored world where God relieves all suffering and followers of Jesus rebuild creation by bringing heaven to earth. I'm going to read a quote from John Mark Comer as he explores this concept in his book Garden City. He says, "We're called to a very specific kind of work, to make a garden-like world." He's referring to the Garden of Eden. "Where image bearers can flourish and thrive, where people can experience and enjoy God's generous love. A kingdom where God's will is done on earth as it is in heaven. Where the glass wall between earth and heaven are so thin and clear and translucent that you don't even remember it's there. That's the world we're called to make." I don't know about you, but I don't want to show compassion just because it's a nice thing to do. I want to show compassion because my Father is relieving the world of suffering by bringing heaven to earth. And if my Father is relieving suffering, then it's my duty and my desire to be part of it. So I just invite you now to have a read and think about that quote and then discuss with the person next to you. What would bringing heaven to earth through compassion look, feel, or sound like for you in your everyday life? who would like to just shout out one or two things that came out of their conversation? What would bringing heaven to earth through compassion look, feel, or sound like? So Justin said beautiful. Caring from down the front, June and Di. Oh, practical, Rachel. That kind of goes with caring as well. Yeah. Available. So we're hearing lots of practical expressions of what compassion might look, feel, or sound like. Thanks so much for engaging in that. I know it was a bit of a challenging question to start with, but as we started to talk and build momentum, I could hear lots of really inspired things coming out of people's mouths. So thank you. So we've discussed what compassion is and why it matters. Now we're going to look at how Jesus shows compassion. Jesus regularly shows compassion, unsurprisingly. We see him go out of his way to feel the pain of others and relieve their suffering. I've just chosen one example today, and this example comes from Luke 7, 1 to 15. And it happened that the next day he went to a town called Nain, and his disciples and a large crowd went with him. And as he approached the gate of the town, behold, a man who had died was being carried out, his mother's only son, and she was a widow. And as a large crowd from the town was with her, and when the Lord saw her, he had compassion on her and said to her, "Do not weep." And he came up and he touched the bier, which I've learned is kind of the vessel with which you move a corpse. Didn't know that previously. And those who were carrying it stopped. And he said, "Young man, I say to you, get up." And the dead man sat up and began to speak, and he gave him to his mother. Just wanted to talk about a couple of things I noticed in this passage. The first thing that I noticed was that Jesus went out of his way to notice the pain of others. Jesus didn't know the people involved in this funeral procession. He was just walking towards the gate. Yet he noticed them. Jesus' noticing was a deep noticing that went beyond his brain into his heart. Like the Hebrew and Greek definition of compassion, Jesus noticed others' pain and he let it sit in his inmost being until he was stirred. From this, we can learn that to be compassionate requires us to engage in deep noticing. It requires us to move beyond the numbness that has become normal in our world. For many of us, we've learnt to process information really, really fast. We've learnt to process information so fast that it goes straight through our brain and doesn't touch our heart. And often the things that we hear the most are the things that we become desensitized to. For example, as some of you know, I'm a primary school teacher and I work with 6 and 7 year olds mostly. And I recently saw a comedy video that was a mock interview between a teacher and an interviewer. And one of the questions in the video was, "How do you deal with the 100th skinned knee?" And the comedian in this video answered, "With no emotion." And I had a good laugh, and then I was a bit shocked because I do that. I'm so used to dealing with bleeding 6-year-olds that I've numbed myself to it. I hand over a Band-Aid and I just get on with my day. So this week, I'd really like to challenge you to look for the places or the people or the scenarios in your life where you have become desensitized and invite the Lord to help you show compassion there. The second thing I noticed was that Jesus listened to his father about what showing compassion looked like. This isn't explicitly stated in the passage, but I'm going to make some assumptions based on the things that I do know. I know that something happened between Jesus seeing and feeling the widow's grief and then deciding that he was going to interrupt the funeral procession, touch the bier and raise a dead man. I don't know if Jesus raised every dead person he met. That's a mystery to me. But I do know that people staying dead was the norm of his environment. It was the norm of the human condition. So to go from seeing a grieving mother to resurrection required Jesus to listen to and act from a norm outside of his environment. I'm going to assume that that environment was the environment of his father. Because in John 5:19, Jesus says, "Very truly I tell you, the Son can do nothing by himself. He can only do what the Father, only do what he sees his Father doing. Because whatever the Father does, the Son does also." From this, we can learn that demonstrating God's goodness through compassion requires us to listen to the Father. He's wanting to partner with us to relieve the suffering of the world, and we're going to be most effective if we talk to him before acting. So I challenge you, next time you're stirred with compassion, stop and ask, "Dad, what are we going to do today? How are we going to fix this? How are we going to relieve suffering?" And the last thing is that Jesus acted. He relieved suffering in a way that was dramatic and supernatural. He went out of his way, despite being in the middle of transit, to demonstrate God's goodness. "I'm yet to raise a dead man, but I imagine the aftermath is time-consuming." From this part of the story, we can learn that compassion requires listening to God and doing what he says, even when it's inconvenient or costly. So to sum up, if I could leave you with two thoughts, if you remember two things today, this is what I'd like you to remember. Remember that compassion is feeling the pain of another and acting in a way to relieve their suffering. And to remember that we can show compassion by noticing, listening, and acting. Up on the screen behind me, I've got a couple of resources that I used today in putting this together. If you want to take a photo of this, if it's something that interests you, please feel free. The quote that we looked at before is from Garden City by John Mark Comer. The Bible Project has a 14-page study guide on compassion. And a lot of the etymology content at the front of this talk came from there. You can't access it on the website, but you can access it through the app. So that's a good read. And finally, I've got a prayer book here by a man named Strawn Coleman. Sometimes he goes by Commoner's Communion. And we're going to finish up today with some of his thoughts. Thank you so much for listening and engaging in conversation today. As we finish up, we're just going to have a moment to reflect on these words. And I just encourage you to sit quietly and meditate on compassion through the words of Strawn. Jim's going to come wrap us up soon. Thank you.